The idea that, you know, I think often we find ourselves in difficult circumstances, and especially maybe at this particular time in our country, many people around us find themselves in difficult circumstances. And, you know, I'm not very old, but I can still remember when things were really, really great and how people were and, like, people's general attitudes about life. And I think there's been a big transition, or at least that's part of what I see. And I think this lesson was intended to kind of address that general point. And so this kind of begs this question: comfort in the uncomfortable. How that seems, you know, it's an oxymoron. How does one find comfort in something that's uncomfortable? But I think, you, as you might have guessed, or certainly will discuss, it's the difference between the external versus the internal, the physical versus the spiritual. And if you, we'll begin with John the Baptist. I think he's maybe the prime example of one who finds comfort in things that are uncomfortable. In Matthew, the third chapter, starting in verse 1, it says, "In those days John the Baptist came preaching in the wilderness of Judea, 'Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. For this is he who was spoken of by the prophet Isaiah when he said, The voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make his path straight. Now John wore a garment of camel's hair and a leather belt around his waist, and his food was locusts and wild honey.'" You know, John did not live a comfortable life in any way. I got ahead of myself there. John did not live a comfortable life. You know, he lived the life of a hermit, essentially. He went out into the wilderness. He had the most basic of covering for his body and ate the most basic things that he could basically scrounge for. Didn't even really do any hunting or anything. He just ate what he could find. But yet he had purpose and he had satisfaction in his life. He was accomplishing something, that the task that had been given to him by the Lord. And so we see this kind of example of one who found comfort in something that we or the world would perceive as being extremely uncomfortable. And so I think, you know, it stands in contrast to that kind of idea that one has to live in comfort in order to be comfortable. You know, there's this idea that we, you know, and I see this in many places, and this is kind of gets a little bit into my way of thinking about things, but you hear this equal outcomes. There's a desire for there to be equal outcomes in this world, that we all have to achieve the same level of comfort as opposed to an equal opportunity. And so it's not about what you work for, it's not about what you earn, or it's not about what you might accomplish, but it's about we all have to have this certain standard that we live by. And things that are luxuries become something that are seen as a necessity. You know, and when you don't have that thing, then you say, well, that's not fair. I should have all of the luxuries that I see, or all the luxuries that I could possibly ever grasp. They should all be mine. And so we lose sight of the reality that someone like John the Baptist, he lived by necessity. He the things that he had were things of necessity. And we lose sight of the reality of that. And they begin to believe that if they can just accumulate enough things, that if I just have enough stuff to be comfortable, then I'll be happy. I'm almost happy, but if I had, you can fill in the blank, then I'd be really happy. Then everything would be just so. Things would be complete. But the problem with this is that when tough times come, when you can't quite grasp that next thing, or you lose the thing that you thought was making you happy, then you become depressed, you become angry, resentful, jealous of what someone else might have. And you become depressed about your own state, and you say, well, my happiness was taken away from me. Happiness is not things. Happiness is an attitude. And people lose sight of that fact. Having comfort or having peace is an attitude. Because, see, they think that by making themselves comfortable in this life, that they'll find peace. They'll find that happiness that they wish for. And ultimately, though, this is an ignorant view. They don't understand what it is. They don't even understand their own emotions or their own way of thinking about things. Because they're searching for an external comfort. Something that will not actually bring them permanent comfort. You know, because the stuff that we have cannot bring real satisfaction. In Ecclesiastes, the 6th chapter, in verse 7, he says, "All the labor of man is for his mouth, yet his soul is not satisfied." the preacher in Ecclesiastes, he seeks through every possible avenue to find out what is wisdom, what is the nature of man's existence. You know, he says, I indulged everything. But he says, those things don't satisfy the soul. They don't bring any lasting peace because they're here and then they're gone. It doesn't matter how hard we work or how much money we earn or how much stuff that we have. It's just going to be consumed. You know, I'll borrow my personal analogy. It's so kind of interesting to me. Crystal and I moved here in October of last year, so less than a year ago. And we probably threw away and gave away, I would say, almost as much stuff as we brought with us. We lived in one place for 5 years, and that was how much just stuff we had accumulated. Stuff that we didn't need. Stuff that we didn't really have a use for. A lot of it wasn't even worth giving to someone. And that's just kind of the world that we live in. And those things, they got consumed. They didn't serve a lasting purpose. And it does not matter how much we consume. It never brings satisfaction. And I think that's the lesson of Ecclesiastes. Is that it doesn't matter in the lesson of the life of Solomon himself, the writer of Ecclesiastes. It doesn't matter how much you consume or how much you lay hold of, those things don't bring satisfaction. Because there's always something else that we can get. And so that's always the goal. And it leads to this inevitable desire for more. You know, in the fifth chapter, he says, he who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase to eat them. So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? You know, it's kind of axiomatic. If you have something, and the more you have of something, the more you'll use it. The more it'll get used up. So he says, you have silver and you want more silver, so you get out more silver and now you're wealthier, but you have more people coming to you and saying, oh, do this for me, oh, do that for me, give me this, give me that. And it's the same way in our own lives. But the more things that we have, the more things that we are able to get, the more things that we'll use. It never quite satisfies because it always increases. There's always a desire for more and more and more. And the idea is that it just comes by. He goes, all you can do is just look at it. You can't accumulate it. You can't hold on to it. It just passes on away from you. It's not something that can bring comfort. And physical things, it sounds somewhat obvious to state, but it's true. Physical things are not permanent. In 2 Peter, the third chapter, he says, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and elements will melt with fervent heat, and both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Physical things are not permanent. Even if something was to last to the end of time itself, it will be destroyed. It cannot pass from this physical life into the spiritual life. Jesus puts it somewhat succinctly in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19. He says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. You know, the things that we have in this life, they break down. They decay. They have to be replaced. They have to be repaired or they have to be thrown away. Physical things don't last. And so the satisfaction that they bring to us can never last. You know, they might give us that pleasure for the moment. They might provide us with the satisfaction of, I got this thing. I love to cook. I just got a new chef's knife. It's really exciting. I was happy when it came. I saw I got the little tracker notification in my email, and I was like, ready to go home and get it. But it's a silly thing. My life is not ultimately impacted by whether or not I have that thing. It doesn't ostensibly make me happier or less happy. I'm just as happy today, now that I have it, as I was a week ago when I didn't. My state in life has not changed. And that's the thing about these physical things. They don't last. They don't provide any real change in our lives. They break and they wear out and they have to be replaced. And everything eventually will be destroyed and will go away. So in contrast to this, you have these physical things that don't last. There's internal things. Things that carry true value. And they carry this value because they're not affected by the circumstances of life. It doesn't matter if one is rich or poor, you know, old or young, living in a prosperous country like America or some third world place where people are barely surviving, if at all. Because these things are permanent. The continuation of the verse that we just read the first part of, in verse 20, he says, "But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Jesus contrasts physical treasure versus spiritual treasure. That when you have built up for yourself spiritual treasure that is housed with God, that's not something that can be taken away. It's guaranteed by God. You know, and that's, you know, I suppose if you want to put it in kind of modern context, people talk about the security of an investment. You know, how secure is this investment? What return can I expect to get? And that's unstable, even in the best of times, what you might get in return. But there's no question as to the return that one receives from the Lord. It's 100%. There's no possibility of loss. All will be returned with even more because of the salvation that He gives to us. And so when this life is over and we are without all of our earthly possessions, the comforts that are laid up and the treasure that's laid up with God is the thing that will give us true eternal comfort, true eternal peace and happiness, or an eternal reward guaranteed by God. And this eternal comfort carries true value because it's not affected by circumstance. You know, I find Paul to be I'm endlessly fascinated by Paul. Because there's so, and maybe it's just because we have so much more of his life and his story than we do with a lot of the other, people that we read about in the New Testament. But just the arc of his life, what we know about him, what he says about himself, you know, you see his attitude in the face of this great context of being on top and then being brought low and then rising again, but then facing so much hardship and difficulty in his circumstances. In Philippians chapter 4, starting in verse 10, he says, "But I rejoice in the Lord greatly now that at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care but lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." You know, just that attitude that it doesn't matter what my circumstances in life might be, whether it's good, whether he was free to travel and move and teach, he was able to be with his companions, those men and those women who he loved and who cared about him, or if he was imprisoned, he was shipwrecked, floating in the sea, beaten, you know, ultimately executed. He says, it doesn't matter which side of the spectrum I'm on. I'm the same person. I can do both. And that's the thing that we strive for. That's what we're looking for in our lives. Because, you know, he was content not because of what he had. And I think that's the great point. He was not content because of the things that he had. Because he probably really didn't have a whole lot. You know, he kind of relied upon other people. This Philippians, verse of Philippians is an example of that. He worked a little bit for himself. But he was not content based upon what he had. He was content because he knew that he had that treasure laid up that Jesus was talking about. He knew that there was a reward at the end. That if he would just put his faith in Christ, that he would overcome all of these earthly obstacles, good or bad, and he would have that reward. And I think it should be the same for us. That our contentment need never change. Our happiness or our satisfaction with life, our peace with life, never need change depending on our circumstances. Because if we are living by faith in Christ, all of those things are superfluous. They don't really matter. If we have that relationship with Him, if we are living by faith in Him, then we're good. Those things don't matter anymore. And so, you know, you would say, well, we should have this internal comfort. We should have this spiritual peace. So how do we obtain it? And it can be obtained, but it's not easy to do. It's not easy. Excuse me. It's not easy to obtain it, or even more importantly, to maintain it. It's not something that we can easily do, but it can be done, as opposed to trying to find comfort in physical things. I believe the first step to finding internal comfort is to remove sin from our life. You know, as I said, I think when we become focused on those physical things, it becomes easy to fall into greed and envy, jealousy of other people, kind of an obsession with the things of this life. In Luke, the 12th chapter, Jesus speaks a parable, and he says, "And he said to them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. And he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." You know, this man spent his life striving to gain earthly comfort and earthly security. And so when he had an abundance of things, he thought that he had made it. He thought that he had achieved his comfort. But the parable that Jesus speaks says that's not the point. He had done all of these physical things, but he had been obsessed about this life. He had failed to serve God. He was not rich towards God. And so, you know, the idea that what good was all of the things that you did? It doesn't serve him in the eternal. It's the striving and yearning for ease that we need to avoid. We don't need to be yearning for those things. What we need to be yearning for and what we need to be striving for are the spiritual things. Maintaining and building up our spiritual treasure with the Father. And I think the kind of the opposite side of this is that we settle the soul by living righteously. We find peace and we find comfort, you know, kind of the opposite of the man in the parable, by living righteously. You know, in Luke, the 12th chapter, we're kind of a little skip a middle portion there. But Jesus says, and he said to his disciples, therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will put on. Life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. And he goes on to say in the rest of the passage, he talks about how the Lord takes care of the lilies of the field and the birds of the air. He says that he takes care of those things. Don't you think he's going to take care of you? And he kind of begins to conclude in verse 29, and he said, and do not seek what you should eat or what you should drink, nor have an anxious mind. For all these things the nations of the world seek after, and your Father knows that you need these things. But seek the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added to you. I've always found that last verse to be maybe one of the most challenging verses, at least to me personally. This idea, because it's so easy. It's so easy. I don't even mean just like worry, but it's so easy to get caught up just in the day-to-day of I have to take care of this thing and I have to take care of that thing, and we have concerns about, you know, are our jobs still going to be there? Are things going to change? It's so easy to get caught up in those things in our minds and to feel like we have to control them. We have to make sure that everything lines up just right. But what Jesus says is that if the Lord's out there seeing to the needs of these small, little, insignificant things, what makes you think that He's not looking after you? What makes you think that you have to be the one to control and manipulate everything and make sure all of the little ducks are in the row? It doesn't make any sense if you put it in that context. If we serve, it's a simple phrase, a simple thought, that if we serve the Lord, He will take care of us. He will care for us. He will provide the way for us to be secure. You know, and that's the essence of it. That's what it boils down to. And we must take comfort in the fact that the Lord cares for us. And He will supply the things that we need. And I think we need to take the lesson from Paul. to learn contentment in all situations. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, in verses 6 through 8, Paul again, he says, "Now godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out, and having food and clothing with these, we shall be content." You know, Paul's instruction to Timothy, or his kind of sharing of this thought with Timothy, I think reverberates down to us. We're no different than Timothy. You know, he lived in the first century in the Roman Empire, and we live, you know, 2,000 some odd years later in the opposite hemisphere. But what's really changed? Human beings are still human beings. The essence of our being to find contentment hasn't really changed. And he says, contentment is what comes with godliness. Not being concerned about the things of this life. Because they pass away. You can't take it with you. It doesn't serve anything. What we have accumulated in this life is not going to matter. Because you can't take it with you. Our comfort must come from our relationship with God. From our service to Him. From the things that He provides. Because if we do that, it will help us to see the irrelevance of these things. And that's what the Apostle Paul had. And I think that's why he got to that point where he said, it doesn't matter what my circumstances in life are. That's not important. Because he got the picture. He got it. That your relationship with God is the only thing that matters. If you have that, then you're going to be content. There is going to be nothing else weighing you down. You know, those earthly possessions, doesn't matter. Even if we only had the bare essentials of life, if we were living like John the Baptist, scavenging in the wilderness, if we have our relationship with God, we will be content. We'll get the picture. We'll see what it is that we need. And I think we need to consider everything to be a blessing, not something that we are owed. You know, I think this is often difficult for us as Americans, and I include myself in that. You know, because we all live to a pretty large degree a life of comfort. You know, especially relative to people who live in other parts of the world. You know, it's and I want to make the caveat that it's not wrong to have physical comforts. I'm not preaching asceticism. I don't think we should have the monastery at Exton or anything like that. But it's just this point that, you know, when Solomon in Ecclesiastes, you know, he called the physical things that we have, he said that they're gifts from God. When you work and you labor and you earn and you have a reward, that's a gift from God. It's not something that's owed to you. It's something that's granted to you as a blessing for being in this life. It's one of the good things that God built into creation. And so we just need to keep that part of our life in its proper perspective. Yes, there's a lot of good things about it. Yes, you know, we should all work and we should earn a living and provide for our families and care for those in need and enjoy the things that we have. But we need to keep it in proper perspective. Because those are not the things that bring us comfort. They are not the things that bring us happiness. You know, and we have to remember that they can be taken away at any time. You just look at the story of Job. You know, Job, it says, was a blameless man. One whom God found no fault in. And yet Job's physical things were taken away. And Job eventually did become quite bitter. But at least at the beginning, before his supposed friends got involved, he maintained his integrity. He maintained his contentment. Of course, he was sad. He lost his family. But he said, I'm not going to curse God. I'm going to maintain my relationship with God, because he recognized that despite all of the physical tragedy, that was the most important thing in his life. And so we too will find comfort if we just remember what's essential. If we remember to trust God and trust in His provision and His care for us, because that's the most important thing. And finally, we must look to God and trust in His providence. In Hebrews, the 13th chapter, he says, "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, 'I will never leave you nor forsake you.' So we may boldly say, 'The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me?'" You know, powerful statements. You know, and I think that's the difficult part. And I think this is the part where our faith has to grow in order for this to be a reality. Because on a certain level, faith is abstract. You know, I can't put my hand on the Lord's shoulder as he stands next to me. I can't. He's not going to like break out his wallet and put a couple hundreds in my hand and take care of me. It's not how it works. But we have to have that understanding. That's where our faith comes in, to trust that the Lord is not going to abandon us. So when a difficult decision comes, we have that fight within our mind. Am I going to try to fix this problem myself? Am I going to be the one who says, "I'm in control of everything in my life"? Or am I going to take hold of faith? Pray for the Lord to provide a way. Put my trust in Him. Not allow myself or my contentment to be changed because of my physical circumstances. Because what the writer here in Hebrews says is that we should have full assurance that He is going to provide us with whatever is needed to overcome the trials of life, whatever obstacles we may face. He is the one who will provide for us. And so, you know, I think once we come to that point, once we get to that level of understanding, I think we find that we have the richest treasure of all. You know, and I think that's, you know, it sounds kind of, Jesus' analogy sounds kind of silly. And I remember when he talks about the treasure in heaven versus the treasure on earth. And I remember some years ago, this is going to sound really stupid, but it just popped into my brain. There was this goofy Access Christian cable show with this like cowboy on it. And the sheriff, the good Christian guy, he was talking about his treasure. And of course, he was talking about his treasure in heaven, but the little bad guy character, he thought he had some treasure hidden. And so he tried to break into the jail to find the treasure. And of course, the moral of the story was that our treasure's not here on earth. And I think it sounds kind of goofy to talk about treasure, but we have the richest thing that we could possibly ever hope to have through God. We have salvation. We have the thing that makes all of this other stuff basically stupid. Because if I don't have salvation, I could be the richest, most successful, most person who is just living the happiest life they could possibly live, and it wouldn't mean a thing. Because just like that rich man in the parable, it would all leave in an instant. And that's what we have with God. And that's why He's truly that greatest provider for us. We have that treasure. And so, with that view in mind, what reason do we have to look behind? What reason do we have to become consumed in the things of this world? I'm not saying we don't or that we're not tempted to, but if we look at it objectively, what reason do we have? Well, the answer is none. And so, while it's easy to be concerned with the things of this world, to be caught up in the pursuits of this life, whatever they may be, they may even be good, you can't lose your focus on God. You cannot allow yourself to turn back and to pursue those earthly things. And so this evening, I implore you to stay with God, to put your focus on the treasure that is laid up for you in heaven, to claim that, to lay hold of that, because that's true comfort. That's true reward that's provided by God. And so this evening, if you have yet to obey the gospel, if you have yet to lay up that treasure for yourself in heaven, then I encourage you to do so. Lay hold of that thing which God has set out for you, the salvation through His Son. There's a great reward for your obedience and your service to Him. So I encourage you this evening to leave behind those worldly pursuits and come to the Lord for the peace that only He can provide. Won't you come while we stand and sing?